come join the conversation, the show that you've been wanting. Keep it real with no filter, weekly we share discussions. WWSD, interviewing creative guests, talking the creative process and sharing all the influences from TV and film. Emmy nominated and winning, yeah, they coming through. Actors and comedians too, directors and writers, way more than a few. Masters of their craft, yes, tune in, you gotta see. This the podcast that you need, WWSD.
Welcome to the WWSD podcast. Weekly, we share discussions with interesting and creative people. I'm your host, Josh, and as always, I'm joined by my buddy and co-host, Seamus. How's it going, Seamus?
Doing great, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Who do we have on tonight?
Tonight, we got a very, very special guest. We are joined by Denver stand-up comedian, Zach Moss. Zach is also a writer, filmmaker, actor, and he has a pretty sweet beard and awesome hair. I'm really excited to talk to him. Zach, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I was just admiring your guys' beards.
Thanks, man.
So you're a comedian out in Denver. How'd you get your start doing comedy?
I started doing shows. Well, actually, my friend whose house I'm at right now, Jake, he did stand up and I watched him do it. And I'd always kind of wanted to do it, too. And I saw him and I was like, fuck that. I can do this, too. And then I did. I got lucky. I started the first time I ever did stand up was at a sex pot comedy show. And I think it was TJ Miller was the headliner, actually. So it was like a show that I didn't belong to be on, but
that's pretty cool.
I happened to know the guy who owned the pizza restaurant where they were doing the show. And it was like kind of back in like old cool weed days where they would close the joint down and it was a private party and we'd do dabs. I watched a lot of comics like do a dab for the first time of their life that night on stage. I watched Sam Talen almost throw up from a dab on stage that night. Yeah, it was a cool place, man. Definitely one of the highest crowds I've ever performed in front of.
So that was the first time you did stand up.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh wow.
And TJ Miller was headlining.
Yeah, he was closing it out. It was like a secret indie DIY show.
How long ago was that?
It'll be like 10 years ago in August, or I think the first Sunday of September or something like that was when it okay. was, or Thursday or something.
So it wasn't an open mic though, right?
No. Uh-uh. So, and then I went and did an open mic like a few days later and just ate shit like so hard. Like I thought it was all good, you know?
You did well at the show at the pizza place.
Yeah. Yeah. I did well. I don't know. But what's funny though, is I was hanging out with my buddy and who was there, Jake Becker, who I did a podcast with for a long time. And he was like, dude, you weren't even saying coherent words. But I was like, I remember saying coherent words. He's like, no, dude, I think people are just laughing at you because you were being like so fucking weird. And he's like, I think you were saying jokes because I heard the jokes come out like eventually. But like, he's like, for that set, I think you were just kind of mumbling. But he's like, everyone was so high. That's how he remembers. I remember it that I did well. But yeah, I'm not going to lie. Early on, I kind of black out a little bit on stage there for a while. I don't know how present I necessarily was. I drank a lot too then.
Were you always going up on stage high or drunk when you're starting out?
Not really drunk all the time, but I smoke weed pretty regularly. I smoke weed a lot. Weird. I did some show where I had to like get high. I had to do a set and then I had to get high and come do a set after I got high. And I was like, sure, I'll do the show. And I got the host messaged me and was like, hey, we ask that you don't smoke any weed before the show. And I was like, all day? Like, that was the hardest part for me about that show is I was like, what the fuck? I have to like not get high all day before this fucking show. So I just got high in the morning. So I was sober or whatever. But yeah, I don't feel like pot really affects me a whole lot in that regard.
Was he only telling you that or was he telling every comic?
I think he's telling every comic that. Okay. I'm not sure how it works. I don't feel like weed does a whole lot to me other than I like to smoke it.
Does it increase your creativity, you feel?
I don't know. Smoke it a lot and have for a long time. So I kind of, it's just a part of my life. I don't know. I quit smoking for a month 7 years ago. I started having really crazy dreams. That's one of the main reasons I smoke weed is I have trouble sleeping and it helps me sleep and it keeps me from dreaming. I don't like to dream.
Do you have disturbing dreams?
Yeah, no. And when I don't know if you know this, but if you quit smoking weed and you have smoked it regularly for a long time, that's one of the side effects of quitting is you have very vivid dreams. when I quit for that time, I had a dream that I like is basically like Roy from fucking Rick and Morty. I had a dream that I like lived an entire lifetime. I had like a family and kids and shit. And like when I woke up from my dream, I didn't know where I was or who I was for a second.
That's crazy. That's so trippy. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just like started crying because I like missed my family and stuff. And I could tell by my surroundings that obviously I was poor.
that's what really got you, is that you were poor.
Yeah. It's like, oh no, I'm poor. Yeah. So I don't know. Anytime my friends are talking about their kids or whatever, I give them advice. I raised some in a dream once for 40 years. So I can talk kids with you. I used to be a dad.
All right, my son's at the age where he just repeats everything I say, and it's really funny, and it's really hard not to laugh. What do I do about that? Because he'll say like the funniest shit, like I'm tired of your shit, like what the hell, like are you fucking serious? Like he says that kind of stuff. Like how do you not laugh when a 3-year-old says that?
I think you do laugh. I don't know what the problem with that is with kids swearing and stuff.
It's hysterical.
Yeah, no, we all like it, and it's this fucked up thing that as adults we're all like, oh man, we have to pretend like this isn't funny, you know, so that the kid feels bad for actually like being cool. I'm like, fuck it. Let's get them started young. You know, I'm sick of, you know, we could get those years of awkward swearing out of the way. Cause then once kids are finally allowed to swear, they're so bad at it. You know, I think we start teaching them young. There's articles now that say, you know, swearing's actually a sign of intelligence.
Yeah.
And whatnot. So, I mean, if your kids, why are you trying to hold your kid back? Like, I think you just roll with it. Let them swear. I think you just need to have a talk with them and be like, there's times when this is inappropriate.
Like there's a cultural difference as well, because we live in Florida. I was originally Philadelphia, like up north and all.
Oh, yeah. Alligators raise your kids.
but like that's like swearing and all, like, because everyone says fuck, and like it's just a bunch of Italians and like people that talk really quick and shit like that down here.
A bunch of people waiting to die.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Yeah, so my brother brought home with his girlfriend one time, and I remember like I was talking to my mom, and I'm like, are you like what's the fuck's wrong with you? And like she was like, take it back, that I said fuck in front of my mom. I'm like, what's the big deal? Like we say fucking shit. Like, that's just the way we talk. And like she just was completely like blown away that like we would talk to our parents like that. I guess like in the South, like you're just brought up never to like swear in front of your parents or your grandparents and shit like that as a sign of respect.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of things in the South that I don't necessarily agree with.
What's your stance on the Confederate flag?
not a fan.
That was the other thing. It's like when we saw, like, it's up north and all, like, you never see Confederate flags, but down here,
it's everywhere.
I mean, this was years ago. I mean, obviously, now it's a little bit better, but yeah, like 20 years ago, that was like one of the weirdest things, like seeing like Confederate flags like flown everywhere.
I don't know if it's still there, but there's a huge one like on the way from Tampa to Fort Myers, like just on the interstate. It's obnoxiously big. I don't know if it's still there though.
Yeah, I think I'm just like over flags in general. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like anybody that's like really proud of a flag, I don't think it ever goes well in the end. I don't know.
I do like weird flags, like weird shit, like stuff from like pop culture. You see people fly in their yards and people like, let's assume it's some like random racist bullshit, but it's like from a TV show. It's like, it's
all flags do is give like people the opportunity to actually like physically assault something that's abstract and like just make people angry because of that.
I don't like the wind. Yeah. I mean, I think that's where my big beef with flags starts, is they're like, yeah, we like wind. We fly in the wind. I don't know.
The wind makes them hard.
Wind does not make me hard. Wind makes me soft. No, it is a big cultural difference, but yeah, I don't know. I think you should get your kid out of Florida, probably.
it's okay for the most part. It's weird. Like I don't. There's a lot of people like that around here. Like a lot of Trump supporters and stuff. I don't really meet them very often.
So Florida, I don't know what it is, but man, the news that comes out of Florida is special.
Yeah.
I'm not even talking about that stuff. I'm just talking about like just the like weird news in Florida, like is great. Like my buddy used to run this like news show with like weird news stories, and he just had a segment that was like Florida. Like every time he would do the show, like literally he had a third of the show that was just like dedicated to Florida news because it was that fucking wild.
It is wild. There's a different, like we have a different law about freedom of information or something, so it's easier to find those things.
Yeah, I heard something about that. too, that there's something something about Florida law that makes it easier for them to steal the stories, basically. So like anytime some shit happens in Florida, it's really easy. But then I was like, that sounds like some shit people in Florida would say to make themselves feel better. So yeah. I don't know. Who's the fact checker for your podcast? Whoever's the cousin that really likes facts, check that out for us and let us know. Please write in. Please mail a handwritten letter with the results, your findings, into the weekly We Share discussion.
We'll read it next episode. We'll share the discussion.
Yeah.
So pizza place, you go on stage for the first time, never doing an open mic before, and then
everybody's high.
Did you prepare for it?
I've been writing jokes for a while. I was a musician before I was a comic. Did everything from, I played in punk and metal bands. I did like singer-songwriter country shit. I rapped for a while. I produced, had some experience being on stage and performing and writing songs and stuff like that. And I had carried a book around that I would write songs in, or just notes or whatever. And like, if I thought of jokes, I would write them in there, and I'd just write funny shit down in there. And that was kind of what I took to the stage the first time. Was just, I had loved comedy for a long time. And I was actually, when I first started, I did some longer stuff, but I always liked one-liner comics a lot. That was the comedy that I was really into. It was like Stephen Wright and Mitch Hedberg and Jimmy Carr and Jeselnik and stuff like that at first. It went fine. And then, I went to an open mic and told some like weird joke about how fucked up duck sex is, and it bombed really hard. I was actually talking with my buddy. I went on tour with him recently, but he was the host of the open mic, I think, that night. And he doesn't remember it, but I was like, I think you zinged me pretty good. I think I would have felt worse if it was like everyone was killing at that open mic. And but it was a lot of pretty steady, shit eating. And then I just ate some too.
How long did it take you until you started feeling comfortable with your joke writing? And you said you had already had stage confidence, but the confidence in being on stage telling jokes, that kind of thing.
I had a lot of luck off the bat, where I actually managed to get in front of some crowds. And it didn't take very long for that. I mean, I had a good set out the gate, and I kind of fell in love with it and was just like, I know I want to do this. And I don't know, any fucking podcast that you listen to where they're like talking to comedians, or any interview with comedians where you talk about how they started, they're just like, everybody eats shit. It's part of it. So it wasn't like occasionally bombing would make me be like, I'm the worst or whatever. I just kind of understood that that was part of the game. And I had some good sets. I was fortunate. Like 9 months into doing stand-up, we have a contest at the Comedy Works here called the New Faces Contest, where pretty much every comic that's not on the list at the club trying to be a serious comic competes in it. And I think that year there's like 120 comics or something. And I made it to the final 10, and I'd only been doing comedy for 9 months. So that was like a pretty big confidence booster. But I also played like a song to close out my set when I first started, and I had the musical background. So it was kind of cheating in my eyes, where I was like, I've been playing music for 10 years. So it wasn't like playing a song at the end. I could definitely do that and put on a show, and it was something different and unique. And and all these comics were like, who the fuck is this asshole with a guitar? I used a flipboard. I had like a Dimitri Martin kind of thing going on. But I'd come out and do some stand up, then I'd do a flipboard, and then I'd play a song and knocking comics out that had been doing it for a while, and nobody knew who the fuck I was. So it was kind of funny. A lot of them are my friends now, but at the, and they were like, when I first met you, I was like, who the fuck is this asshole? Funny how time goes by. No, I definitely used some gimmicks and some tricks when I first started to do all right. And then, after that happened, everybody was kind of talking shit about me using my guitar. So I was like, I don't need this thing. And then I didn't use it for like 5 years, and I still don't really ever use it. I probably should. What's funny is now I'm like, I should probably bring it back, because it, separate me a little bit more from everybody else. But who knows? I do have this song that I want to do. It's like a country song, and it's like, I'm not crying. It's a sketch video I made, but I want to take it to the stage. But it's like a guy at a bar looking down, like, I'm not crying. And then he's like, I just got cum in my eyes. And he lifts his head up, and he's got cum all over his face. And I want to do a live version on stage. I'm thinking about having my buddy build me this cowboy hat. He does special effects stuff. I can put on to do the last song, and then it turn my back to the crowd, and this hat will shoot cum onto my face. And then I can have reveal for the crowd, but too lazy probably to ever really do that, but kind of want to.
Sounds wild.
So you did mention for you that was from a sketch you did. So do you do a lot of sketch writing as well as stand up?
I fuck around with it. I like it. It's something that's a lot of work, and I think it's cool now. When I was working on more of that stuff, it was like YouTube was like the way to go. And I hate social media and all this shit. And I like making sketches, but I didn't really feel like I got a ton of, like, for what I was putting in, I didn't feel like I was getting much back. I still like to do it, and I still will like write stuff, and I'm always down to like act and stuff with friends and do shit like that. But as far as like producing them and like setting up everything, and I'd rather just be a player than the coach on that.
So you, I mean, of everything you've done, you enjoy stand-up the most?
Yeah, that's definitely my favorite, for sure.
So, you know, if everything goes well, like, what do you want to be doing? What's your kind of, like, vision of success in comedy?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I feel like I kind of have somewhat what I want. I do comedy for a living, and I'm happy. I'm poor, very poor. So it would be nice to do what I'm doing now and not be so poor. I do like to write. I wrote during the pandemic, and I'm having some people look at that right now to see if it's any good.
Is it a novel?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of more of a novella, I guess. By the time I cut all the fat out of it, it was, I think, 190 pages. It's not a super long novel. I do script writing, too. I'm also retooling a pilot that I wrote into a feature right now that I think we'll be filming in August.
Nice.
So,
cool.
But yeah, I'll be just like a producer and a writer on that.
Are you acting in it as
well? No, I mean, I like to act. You know, I'm definitely a bit part kind of guy or anything. You know, like, it's fun. I like doing stand-up, and I like writing. That's what I'm doing and what I'd like to keep doing. I just hope I make some more money, but I am happy. I like what I do, and I get to work with a lot of people that I love and respect.
Yeah, that sounds good, man.
I'm definitely not bitching, so.
Yeah. Is the feature that you're writing, is it a comedy?
It's a drama that has humor in it. I mean, I'm a comedian, so if there's humor in a scene, I want to kind of like find it and play with that, because I think a lot of humor is organic in life. I kind of feel like the straight comedy is dead. Like, everything's like combo of horror or drama or buddy cop or action and comedy. Like, this year, what are some like straight comedies that you can think of that have come out?
Jackass. That's something totally different, though.
But that's like reality. That's not even,
right.
It's, yeah, reality. That's like,
it's unscripted.
Yeah. I mean, Borat, the last Borat that came out was like straight up comedy.
Yeah. You know? That was also kind of a reality thing too, a little bit.
Yeah, it was unscripted, partially unscripted.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the feature was a pilot, and then you're converting it into, like, why did you decide to convert your pilot into a feature instead of just finishing out the pilot and making a series?
Did finish it out.
Okay.
So I have a writing partner, and then I also work. I do a film festival called the Phone It In Film Festival. It originally started in Philly. I've been doing it for, I think I've done like five or six of them or something. We do all that together. He basically is a set designer. He owns LFX. They do set design and makeup, special effects stuff. He's done that for like 20 years. He's opening two campuses. One's 10,000 square feet, state-of-the-art studio that'll be open here in the next few months. And then he's breaking ground on a 20,000 square foot studio and event space in like kind of close to downtown Denver that should be done in the next like 2 years. He basically wants to have a creative arm of that and kind of follow, you know, kind of like a Blumhouse or model where, you know, you're making high concept, low budget films. And creative division, and it's a lot more work to do that kind of stuff. We can shoot and try and sell on our own, so that's kind of the goal. And he wants to start doing that with films, and this is going to be our first one.
That's cool. Okay. So why? I mean, you mentioned that like the pure comedy is dead. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, because no one's writing them. I don't know what it is. Because Seth Rogen decided he wanted to do more serious stuff, and he was the only one whose scripts they were reading. And Adam Sandler still just does stuff. I don't fucking know. I mean, I guess Adam Sandler's doing some of that stuff for like Netflix. That's comedy.
It's pretty formulaic, I think, like what he's doing.
It's probably more financially responsible to do a series than a movie, I would imagine. And like his Netflix and like Hulu, they pay pretty well for series and stuff. So it might just be more financially viable.
Yeah. I don't know.
Do you find that like when you're writing, you know, whether it's for like film or for your literary stuff, do you feel like that comes from like a different creative place than the comedy writing jokes?
Writing sucks. It's hard. And there's some psychos that literally I get up and do it every day for this many hours or whatever. Like I have to be inspired. The script writing, my partner kind of helps. I feel like we kind of help keep each other motivated. And, you know, we send stuff back and forth a lot. So it's like, oh, I'm going to feed off of what you did. And that also creates like a deadline. I need to send you this. I'll send you back my draft in the next few days or whatever. So it keeps you honest. And I do like doing the work, but it's definitely hard to get started, I think, for me. When it came to writing the book, that was like a slog. And I just had an idea for a long time that I wanted to do. I had some time during the pandemic, and I just made myself write 1,800 words every day for 2 months. And sometimes it was fucking brutal, where I really didn't want to do it and I was hating it. And every word was a struggle. And some days it was like, oh shit, I'm already done. But I do like to write, and once I get there, but it's definitely hard to get motivated on projects sometimes. And stand up, that usually comes from things happening to me. I don't usually write my jokes out right away. I'll have an idea in my head and just trust myself to tell the story or the joke. And then after I tell it a few times, because I feel like on stage, when I don't know what I'm going to say, to get a laugh and I have a premise, maybe sometimes my lizard brain just does it.
Like a survival thing.
Yeah. I like to put my brain in that position with jokes where you have to come up with a funny line right here or you fail, you know, and like sometimes that works really well. And I don't know, sometimes you go up with something new and it just eats shit or whatever, but I like to give something like that time before I write it down. And then eventually if I really want to take it to the next level or I'm doing it for a competition or, you know, an important set or going to be people there, like I'll write things out word for word and listen to it and go over everything. A new trick that I just thought of I'm going to start doing is just paying someone, because there's like people that'll just do dictation or whatever on the internet. It's like $1 a minute, but as opposed to me listening to my hour long set and typing it out, I'd much rather just pay someone $60 to get it back all typed out. And that's something I just thought of recently. And a lot of people are like, when I talk about writing it out, they're like, I just have so much trouble listening to my set and writing it out, doing all that. If you people that work the way I do, as opposed to vice versa, because some people write everything word for word and then take it to the stage. I mean, there's 1,000 ways to fucking do comedy. You just have to find what works for you, you know?
Do you have anybody that like helps you with like tags and things like that?
Oh yeah. I have tons of friends that when we work together, we'll watch each other's sets. There's a writing group that I work with sometimes, SM Comics on the East Coast. Charlie Nadler runs that. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
What's that called? Is that the like comedy school or something?
No.
Is that out of Long Island?
No, it's just literally some comics. They get in a Zoom room and run 5 minutes and then we give notes.
Oh, okay.
It's like a private group.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
To be honest, I think that works better than like, I think once you're comfortable being on stage, I don't know how valuable open mics really even are, because I think it builds bad habits for making people at open mics laugh too, because it's a different animal. But I think it's almost more productive to just, instead of going to a mic with four of your friends, like just literally running 5 minutes each and spending 25 minutes with three people helping you punch that up or fix it or whatever. I like comedy still. Some comics really don't. I still like it for the most part. I mean, don't get me wrong. If there's things that annoy me or bug me or whatever.
What do you mean that they don't like it anymore?
A lot of comics love doing comedy, but hate watching comedy or watching other comics or, you gotcha. Know, or just they'll only watch their friends or they'll only watch people they above them or whatever. Like I like watching all echelons. I like watching people eat shit. But I always like, if I have an idea when I watch a set, I always try to pass it along to people. And yeah, it's crazy. A lot of tags that I've given to people over the years, pros coming through the club or whatever, like have wound up on their albums. Like a lot of people have used notes that I've given them on stuff. And
it's cool.
And yeah, I mean, that's part of comedy. What's funny is that I feel like people that are least likely to take a tag from me are the people that are in their first like 2 years. Anyone like in the people that have been doing it for a long time, like, oh my God, you have a note, you have a tag. What is it? I want to hear it. You know, or you have a callback, or, you know, I love hearing, you know, even if it's something I don't use, it may give me an idea for something to use or to think in a different direction. So I don't know. I'm always open to hear what people have to say, and that's kind of part of the fun.
It's interesting how people that are further along, they tend to be a little bit more humble a lot of the time in that way, at least around the art, you know, not necessarily as a person.
Yeah, no, I'm a prick, but no. I think everybody, when they start, who's somewhat good, is like, I'm going to make it in 4 years. Like, I'm going to have my own show. I can already make people laugh for 10 minutes and I'm only, 6 months in or whatever. And then time goes by and they're like, oh shit. Like, I made it to the finals in that competition. I was like, I should move to New York or, yeah. And then you get a reality check as you get beat down for like the next 5 years. And then you're like, oh, all right, this is how this actually works. The people that make it in a short amount of time or overnight is very rare. And I mean, if you want to do this, I think you really have to like it.
Yeah. Do you think that like when you're really successful starting out like that, like you were, is that just lucky? Is that like, you haven't gone through the whole diversity of potential crowds and situations and things, like maybe you hit the right conditions for a few times? And
I mean, anytime you're in a competition, there's definitely an element of luck. I mean, once you're past the first round, you're usually working with people that are funny, you know, right. Everybody on the lineup is good. It's like, which judges do you register with? I watch competition shit all the time where I'm like, that's not who won. I can tell who won. You know, I listen to crowds every night. I'm like, that's who fucking won. There's even been times when I lose and I'm like, I lost, but the person who won did not win or whatever. But comedy's subjective, so it's tough. I think there's always an element of luck. And I think definitely some people have it more easily than others. It takes some people longer to crack the code. Any advantage that you have starting off is a huge advantage. Like I said, feeling comfortable on stage is such a huge advantage. I can tell, I'll watch new comics and like I go give notes for comedy classes and stuff sometimes, but I'll watch these comics that are new and I can tell if you're a musician or an actor or whatever, just by how you stand on the stage and grab the microphone, because you're already so far ahead of the other people that are just trying to figure out like, how the fuck do I talk into this thing? How close should I be? Like, what do I do with the stand and how do I adjust it? And what is this knob? I think there's a huge advantage to any time that you've spent on the stage, talking to people on the stage. It all helps. Definitely some people just have it. I'll watch comics and be like, oh shit, they're going to be really fucking good. And then I'll watch comics and be like, they're going to have to work really fucking hard. And sometimes it just clicks for people too, you know? And then there's some people that I've like, they've been doing it for 10 years and I'm like, holy shit. Like for them, I'm like, maybe like year 12, it just fucking, you know, that's the year and they just fucking take off. And I root for those people because it takes a lot to do comedy poorly for that long. it's harder. That's some hard shit. You got to really love it. You know what I mean? Like, or be deluded. I mean, I don't know. I think Mike Birbiglia says everybody has to be a little bit delusional when they start comedy. And I'd agree with that.
I know with certain disciplines, there's kind of like, even though like you're struggling and it just feels like you're failing over and over and over again, like there's almost like this consolidation point where everything kind of falls into place.
Yeah. Where it all just clicks.
Yeah. It's not all like a gradual like journey. It's like failure, 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 failure. And then there's this point where things just kind of consolidate and then you kind of just get it.
Yeah. I think there's something like that with comedy, but I also think there's just so many things with comedy where as soon as you think that you've got it, like you start thinking about something else or noticing another element or learning something else. Like as soon as you're like, man, my timing is so good, then you're like, well, what about my body language? What about my eye contact? What about my, and then you change your body language and your eye contact and you're like, oh, this is fucking up my timing. Like, that's what I think is so exciting about why I like comedy, is I still feel like I'm, you know, learning new shit all the time. And I think there's always room to grow as a performer and with your material and everything, which is kind of what makes it exciting. Because yeah, you can go into a room one night and do something and go into literally the same room the next night with a different crowd, or literally the same room an hour later with a different crowd, and it's a whole new animal. So try and get more consistent all the time and not forget to have fun.
is that frustrating though? Like, cause like you said, you can do the exact same set and one night it kills, the next night it just bombs. And there's not really any rhyme or reason why. Like how do you kind of like cope with that?
Oh, I always can find reasons why. Like I had a show on Saturday that was not, the last time I performed at this place was one of my favorite shows of 2021. And I was back in 2022 and it was just a much different crowd. There was a guy in the crowd that he was 95 years old, which is, you know,
good for him.
You tell yourself stuff like, you know, maybe my comedy's not for 95 year olds, you know, or,
is that your demographic?
Yeah. But I mean, my set was okay. I definitely had a few minutes that were just stuff that they were like, this is gross, or, you know, he shouldn't be cussing here or whatever, you know, kind of stuff. I don't know. I can find reasons though, where I'm like, oh, they're older, or, and sometimes it's just like, fuck, I guess they didn't like, or whatever, you know.
Are there things that you do to kind of test out a crowd to adjust how you're going to do things?
I'll usually watch the other comics.
Let's see what sticks. I gotcha.
Imagine there's little things you can do. Even like, I imagine the different crowds respond differently, even to like, yeah, like timing changes and stuff.
Sometimes, you know? I don't care though. Like on Saturday, I had an idea that they weren't going to like some of these jokes, but I was also just like, fuck it. I want to try them and see if I can make them like them. Some of them they did. And some of them, they were like, nice try, buddy. Comedy's so subjective when it comes to that shit. Got to figure out what works. And yeah, sometimes it doesn't. And if it doesn't, fuck it. Actually, there's too many comics. If you try it and it doesn't work, you should quit. There's not enough people giving that advice. But yeah, seriously, if you ever have a bad set, hang it up. It's not for you. Try poetry.
That's kind of what it is. Like when you're bombing, it's just bad poetry, right?
Poetry's always pretty bad.
You have to take yourself a little seriously to enjoy that, I think. So do you work the road much?
Yeah, I do a fair amount. I just did like a 20-day tour from Denver to DC. Yeah, I was in Wyoming the weekend after that, in Trinidad, Colorado the weekend after that. And then this last weekend I was in the Springs in Parker, which isn't really the road. I drove home at the end of the night for those two shows, but travel a fair amount or whatever for comedy.
And do you like doing the road work, or do you feel more comfortable like at like your home base?
I do great on the road. Some comics, like my material only works in the city. Like my shit tends to work at both places because it's fucking pretty simple. Poop and farts and stuff. So
what about the tear and grind of the road? Like, does it wear you out, or are you able to like just thrive?
No, I miss my girlfriend a lot. That's the hardest part. And my dog. So it's not fun to not be with the people you love or your family or whatever. But it is fun to meet new people and see new places. Like you were talking about Florida. I haven't been to Florida. I'm trying to set goals for my comedy that are that I can control. Yeah. So like trying to do all 50 states in the next year, by the time I turn 40, which is in June. So of next year.
How many do you have left?
21.
Yeah, that's not terrible. That's pretty reasonable. Do you have like the hard ones done? Are you just doing continental US, or you gotta do like Hawaii and Alaska?
I've done Alaska and thinking about just doing Hawaii for my 40th. Also, a lot of my friends that have toured a lot of them have done every state but Delaware.
Just fuck Delaware.
Well, yeah, it's like they'll be like, Delaware is a tough nut to crack, you know, kind of shit. But like part of me thinks it might be really funny to just do a show in Delaware for my 40th birthday. And because I have a bunch of friends that are literally at like 49 and Delaware is all they have left.
That'd be cool.
Might be more fun than Hawaii, right? Delaware.
Yeah, a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
It seems like there's too much money there to laugh.
Oh, the rich laugh. They like to laugh at poverty.
Yeah.
I do great in front of rich crowds.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I tell them about how poor I am. They love it. They're like, at least you're not that.
But speaking of being poor and all that, like how does like your family take you being like a comedian and stuff? Are they pretty embracive of it, or like even like your girlfriend?
I don't have any kids, and my girlfriend's a opera singer, so she gets it. We're poor together. Yeah, my family is, they're supportive, you know, which is fortunate. I don't have one of those like they come to my shows and, you know, for the most part, like the jokes. My mom doesn't like one of my jokes that she asked me not to tell anymore when she's in the crowd.
Was it eating ass or something?
No, it's short. It's that I came home to surprise my parents for Christmas. And boy, did I surprise them fucking on the kitchen table, which is disgusting because my mom's been dead for 7 years. And I never knew that's what my dad meant when he said he's a huge fan of Coldplay. But what's funny is that my parents divorced when I was three. So like when I tell that joke, it's usually my dad, my stepmom, and my mom in the audience. And it's fucking so funny to me to do it when all three of them are there. But yeah, my mom was like, please don't fucking do that joke anymore when I'm there. So I don't do that for my mama. I don't do the joke where she's getting fucked while dead. But literally, that's like the line for my parents are pretty cool. Yeah, that was like the line. And I've still done it in front of them. I still, but it was like the third time I did it. She's like, don't do that ever again, please.
Well, now you have to do it every time. So
yeah,
at least this encourages you to do it.
Yeah, God, my mom wasn't such a sweet lady. But no, I'm fortunate in that regard. And it's weird because, yeah, I definitely have some friends whose parents suck. If you're kids trying to do something that they like and are passionate about, you should be happy. Like, I don't know. Like,
yeah, it's a hard line. Yeah, because you want them to be happy.
I'm also not like fucking calling them for money, you know, all the time or any shit like that, which be able to kind of take care of yourself or whatever. But I don't know. I know a lot of people whose parents who have the money are like, yeah, be a comedian. We'll pay your fucking rent even. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it's definitely not so good for some people. And no, I'm very fortunate to have a family that supports me. I can't imagine how tough that would be to want to share what you do with the people you love and your family and not have them support that. That's pretty fucked up. Yeah. If your family doesn't support your creativity, I do.
Yeah, we do too.
Your family's who listens to your podcast, right?
You guys no, actually, my family really doesn't.
What the fuck? You need to start listening to the pod, supporting these boys.
Are you working on an album or anything or a special? Or
yeah, I have like an album I want to cut. I'm just trying to figure out where the fuck I want to do it and how. I have a bunch of kind of irons in the fire right now, and I'm just trying to balance them out. But yeah, that's trying to figure out where I want to do it. But I have an hour that I would like to definitely do so I can move on.
What would be like some of the methodology of like picking where to do the hour? Is it like just the crowd or like the atmosphere? Like, why would you pick one place over another?
They'll have me. I don't know.
Because I always hear comedians like, oh, I want to do my special like in this town or this club or this space. And I'm always curious, like, why?
I mean, basically, it's like, oh, this is room is hot as fuck. Or these jokes always usually go well here. I think that's the logic. There's some logic. I recorded like an EP that I never ended up putting out, but I recorded that in my hometown just because I'm originally from South Dakota. So I recorded it there. Because it was easy to find a theater and fill it with people. And first thing I recorded, I wanted to have like friends and family there and stuff. But as I was kind of waiting, put it out for a little while. And in the time I waited, some stuff happened that made the closer on that album from a 3-minute joke into it's now like 13 minutes long. I can do a way better version of it. So I didn't end up putting it out. And I need to do something. Thanks for bringing that up. Now I can't enjoy this barbecue.
it'd be nice to hear more of your work.
Yeah. How the fuck did you guys find me?
So I have a weird methodology when I try and find comedians to talk to. Usually my first thing is I'm assuming you know Sean Finnerty.
I do know.
He follows
Sean.
You.
Yeah.
So we had Sean on a while ago, and he's fantastic, a really good friend of the podcast. And so whenever I want to look up comedians, I usually look for people that Sean follows and then other comedians that we've also had on follow. And it's kind of like
I think
it was Sean. Yeah. Fair enough. We had Sean and Chanel Ali both followed you.
Yeah, no, Chanel's actually, I agreed to do your podcast because I saw that they had done it.
it's a good litmus test.
I don't know Chanel super well, but we did some shows in Jersey. I did a show in Jersey like last year, and then I think she was on High Plains, but she's so fucking funny. I like her comedy a lot. And then Sean was at Go Bananas when I was going through Ohio, and he gave us spots on his show. And then, yeah, we became friends. I think we ended up hanging out pretty much the whole weekend. So, yeah, he's a really good dude. I like Sean a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he's a really great
guy. Yeah, we ended up going fucking walking around, spent some time in Cincinnati, met some cool dogs. He's a good dude. So, yeah, no, I wondered, what was going on. I'm like, huh, this guy's from Florida. Want to talk comedy. That makes sense. And then I was like, immediately, I was like, huh, shit, I don't remember meeting these guys. Where did I meet these guys? So I'm trying to like figure out where the fuck I met you. And then I'm like, I don't think I know them.
Yeah, no, it happens. Like a lot of the Florida comedians, like, because we usually say, like, hey, we had so and so on our podcast. Like, would you like to come on? And it's like, it's kind of like the same thing. Like, once they know, like, we talk to whoever, they're usually more willing to come on. So,
well, yeah, I used to do a podcast and fucking whiskey and cigarettes for a long time. And got out, you know, right as people started making money off of podcasting, like a real
good call.
And yeah, I, you know, at first we just interviewed like some friends and local comics. And then I think we paid the Sklar brothers $200 because that was their,
okay,
their appearance fee was $100 a piece to like make an appearance for an event or whatever. So we were just like, hey, will you take your appearance fee to do a podcast? My buddy, Jake, who's house tonight, he set the shit up, but. So yeah, they did it for $200. And like my one buddy was like taking dabs and they were like, oh my God, what is this, like crack? What is he doing? this is a long time ago, like, you know, 9 years ago or something. But yeah, they did the show. And then after that, we'd send out an email, you know, with past guests like the Sklar brothers. And and then through that, we ended up interviewing so many people through that. So podcasting school, I may try and get back in someday, but there's a trick, you know, just send people an email that says, include the people that followed him, like with past guests, like blah, 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 blah.
In all honesty, that's how we do get a lot of our guests. Like I said in the beginning, like we do talk a lot of people that work on like the Marvel movies. We've had like 5 or 6 different Emmy winners on at this point. Like this random people we never thought we would ever talk to. And it's just like, once you get that first person, just kind of, all right, it builds up to the next person, and you kind of just go up the ladder.
Yeah, no, it's fun.
We usually ask one last question from our guest. Any words of wisdom for an aspiring comedian that you wish you would have got when you first started out?
Don't forget about your friends and your family and the people you love, because it's really easy to just start hanging out with comics and kind of do all that. But it's something I read, a lot of the big names in comedy, like when you see their biography or their regrets, it's that they didn't, you know, spend enough time with those people in their life. And also that's where a lot of the funny stuff comes from, hanging out with people. Yeah, have experiences, live your life. There's nothing more boring than someone that starts comedy as a child and doesn't go do anything. I mean, granted, there's some people that are great and have takes, but I'm like, I think it's important to like live a life and do stuff. And comedy's great and awesome, but you know, don't forget about all the other shit.
Yeah, I think it's good advice for anything, not just comedy. There are people that like just talk to the same people and the same, you get kind of stuck in your industry and you don't really deviate from it. That's why the reason we like doing this podcast as well is because we both work in tech. And so that's one thing we're like, we don't want to talk about tech all day.
Are you guys comics?
No,
I've done a few open mics. Like I started in January. I kind of wanted to try it after talking to a bunch of comics.
Yeah. How'd it go?
2 out of 3 went really well.
Yeah. You hooked?
Yeah. I am definitely.
Well, 3 times since January. How many, what's the scene like for you guys there?
Terrible.
There's one open mic a week.
Oh, wow.
It's not a lot.
Well, cool. Yeah. I used to work in tech too. And it got me. Cool. Well, yeah, yeah. Shit. It was nice chatting with you guys and everything.
Yeah, definitely. You too, man.
Yeah, we definitely really appreciate it. Yeah.
Plugs. I'm, like I said, I'm poor. If any of your family that has money is listening, send it to @ZAC-MAAS on Venmo. And no, follow me @MossComedy on Instagram, right? That's important, yep. Apparently.
Zach, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on tonight, though. We really do appreciate talking to you and hanging out.
Yeah, Josh, Seamus, nice meeting y'all.
Yeah, nice meeting you too. Yeah, let us know when you're in Florida. We'll come out and see you. It's near enough.
Yeah, for sure. Did you follow me on Instagram? Or not?
If I didn't, I will follow you.
Yeah, I'll do it right now.
That's why I did this for 2 followers.
There's a lot. It's a lot cheaper just to buy followers.
Yeah, we're following you.
Nice meeting you.
All right, nice meeting you. I'll see you there, man. Enjoy your barbecue.
Good night.
He's a cool guy. I like him a lot.
Yeah, no, I like him a lot too.
I know we, I wanted to find out more about the Denver scene and stuff like that. We didn't really dive into that, unfortunately. I was curious, like, how that, especially he's done road work. He's gone to different cities. I was curious, like, how that scene kind of differs from others. Cause we talked to Lauren Defoe and all. She was in Denver for a little bit. And she said, like, one of the biggest issues she had was, like, the crowds were relatively smart and all. They wanted to hear, like, smart things. Smart stuff. Yeah, they wanted, like, comedy that said something or, like, had, like, a, made you something think, to say
has a message. Yeah.
And so I was kind of curious, like, kind of affected him, but
I enjoyed that joke about his mom being dead.
I laughed it. I enjoyed it.
I thought it was cool that there was like a, that was like a big, like, misdirect. There's, and I like the Coldplay thing afterwards. That was cool.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of misdirect comedy. The one thing he did say was the guitar. I think that's interesting. So like when we talked to Stephen Bowles and all, he like doing like a musical section.
Part, yeah, of the they both have yeah, long hair. Is that what you're bringing up?
No. Is this one of those things like I enjoy and all? You don't see it that often. Like you said, kind of separated from the crowd. And so I hope he does go back and kind of bring that back, because I always think that's a cool idea to like end your like a special or like a longer set, like close out your hour or whatever is with like a song bit.
It can be gimmicky. I don't think it's gimmicky if it's actually like a real expression of like your skills and like, you know, what you're trying to accomplish creatively, you know what I mean? But if it's, mm-hmm, but like he said in the beginning, he was kind of using it, you know, building on something that he'd already been working on for 10 years, you know, and he's bringing it into comedy, which I think that was really smart, because like, it's a lot easier to build on your strengths. It's possible he could have won that contest without it, you know, but I think that does make you pop in a way that you might not otherwise, you know, because like people are going to remember that.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not like hacky or anything, because it is uncommon and like it is playing to like one of your strengths and all, which I think is cool.
I think it'd be gimmicky though.
Yeah.
Especially but if it's like
physical, it's not comedy, is like gimmicky and shit. Like,
well, it's just another thing. I think it's good when it's good, but when it's not good, it's gimmicky. I like that he's really in it for the love. It was cool to like see that he was kind of satisfied too.
No, he's like you said, like he loves comedy, like he's in love with it.
It's weird how in our culture, like being satisfied can be seen as a negative, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's contentness, or it's like you're no longer growing.
But like I think if you get to a point where you're happy, I think that's winning.
No, that's 100% winning. I mean, you hear like the stories of like dudes that like work in the same company for like 40 fucking years or something, and like they were happy the entire time. Like, so like, who are you to say like you should have done more or done something different? I mean, there are people that do enjoy what they're doing, and
yeah, and it's like the experience, the inner experience that you can have when you're doing something creative like that too can be just as rich, I think, as anything external. You know, mm-hmm. I want to talk to him about like the Colorado wilderness. It looked like he liked to get out there just from the shirt he was wearing.
Oh, like he likes to hike and shit.
Yeah. I wonder if he had any good stories about that.
It was crazy. His first show was opening for TJ Miller, or not opening, but TJ Miller closed out the show and all.
Yeah.
It's very unique and all. Like usually everyone does like an open mic like a couple times before they even start really doing anything. And
that kind of shit can happen when you're in a big comedy city. People do like secret spots and stuff everywhere when they're working shit out. So
that was the first time we've heard that, and also I thought that was neat.
Thank you all for listening. If you would like to support the WWSD podcast, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/WWSD_podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Four, one, three, six. Just give me a ring. And
am I cutting that out, or am I leaving that?
That is my actual phone number. It's nice that I feel like people could find it on the internet. Google Zach Moss phone number right now and see what comes up. Can you find it? You guys are tech guys. Let's see.
Seamus does all the, he does all of our deep dives.
Oh, I didn't know that we could do live deep dives, because
there's a lot of Zach Mosses.
Yeah.
You're not 26, right? That's a little.
No,
it's not there. It's not easy.
Now it will be when you listen to this podcast.
Yeah, if you want to find out my number, you have to listen all the way to the end of Weekly We Share Discussions.